comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
All right, welcome everybody to episode 3 of Nerds United on Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. Greg Mahochko here doing something that I haven't done yet before, at least not in Nerds United. Of course, we've had some fantastic guests in the first couple of episodes, and if you haven't yet, I encourage you to go back and listen to those shows and drop a comment or two or 18 or whatever you feel is necessary. But today, flying solo. Quick hit. I'm going to try to do these. If I don't have a guest lined up, I'm going to try to get a new show out at least every other week. Something for your earbuds to digest. And hopefully today's show or this week's show or episode 3, however you want to look at it, it goes off well and you like it. If you don't like it, we'll just have to wait until guests are beating down my door, which, by the way, guests coming next week. Talk about that at the end of the show. But wanted to talk about a few things. Of course, as much as we talked about the big news at Comic-Con and as many headlines as that made when it was announced, you know, they show the Man of Steel emblem and then the Batman logo also. When it was announced that Batman would be joining Superman in the next DC feature film, all of a sudden, it became, who's going to play Batman? Would Christian Bale, don the cowl again? Even though he said that he would not do that. There were rumors, and they turned out to be just rumors, that, Warner Brothers and had offered Bale $50, $60 million to come back, please. But Bale is done as Batman. So Christian Bale was a possibility. Other names that I saw that I liked particularly was John Hamm. If you're not real familiar with John Hamm, the St. Louis native, you can see him as Don Draper on Mad Men. And there were a couple other names that I didn't necessarily agree with. Among those, Ryan Gosling, Orlando Bloom even. Yeah, I mean, could you imagine? And I'm not taking anything away from the acting chops of Orlando Bloom, but Legolas as Bruce Wayne Batman, that one... That was a hard pill to try to swallow. So I'm no offense to him, and he's fantastic at what he does. I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings movies. I know he's only a part character in that of a larger ensemble, but I'm I'm a fan even of the Pirates of the Caribbean. More or less, the first two, three here and there on Stranger Tides, the latest one, take it or leave it. Kingdom of Heaven as well, talking about the Crusades. So I'm not disrespecting Orlando Bloom as an actor or artist or whatever descriptive term for his career that you want to make. All I'm saying is I don't think that he would have been the right fit for Batman, Bruce Wayne. Again, same with Ryan Gosling. But all arguments now are... Put aside, we know who will don the cowl and the cape and roam patrol Gotham at night as the Dark Knight, and that will be Ben Affleck. Now, as soon as it was announced, and it was announced this past Thursday, which would have been now you're going to try to make me know dates. I think it was the 22nd. We'll go with that, 22nd. That's last Thursday night. Anyway, as you would imagine, internet, social media blew up about it. A lot of people said, really? Even though he was the bomb in Phantoms, are we going to trust Ben Affleck to be Batman? And then there was the other half that said, okay, it's not so bad. And I'll tell you where I lie. Because with a situation like this, you're in this universe, if you will, you are introducing the Batman character into a pre-existing world, whereas in all other, film variations of Batman, he has been standalone. But now he's entering Superman's territory. So you can't bring in a new guy, which is why I don't think Ryan Gosling, and I'm not saying Ryan Gosling's not new, or that he's new. I'm not saying he's not a veteran actor. I'm just saying that you need somebody who's a little bit older, perhaps a little bit more, I don't want to say experience, but you got to bring in an actor, I think, who has a little bit more tenure, perhaps carries with him a little bit more clout. And I think Affleck does, certainly on the directing side of the camera and acting as well. And I know that, you know, he's donned a cowl in the past as Daredevil. You can say what you want about that. I don't dislike that movie, and I don't blame his performance on the reason that you know, so many fans are down on that particular movie, calling, you know, some people call it the worst superhero film of all time, and I think that's a little unnecessary and perhaps a little bit of an overreaction, because you got to remember there's Catwoman and Elektra and there are a couple of them. Anyway, I don't think that Daredevil's that bad of a movie, which, if you disagree with me, you're probably saying, well, this guy has no authority, he has no credibility, I'm turning this show off right now. Well, thanks for tuning in for the first 5 minutes. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. Ben Affleck, because you got to have somebody who's older, and I mean, they were talking, you know, bringing in some truly experienced actors, you know, and for a Dark Knight Returns, you know, the classic Frank Miller story, you know, they say, you know, that if you remember the announcement at Comic-Con, they used some audio, some dialogue from that story, but it's not going to be the Dark Knight Returns. It's not going to be that kind of story. I'm sure that there will be, yes, a confrontation between Superman and Batman in the yet to be titled Man of Steel sequel. I think you have to have an old enough guy who can bring some experience for when they start doing, you know, the Justice League movies, some of that, you know, hey, I've been around, I know what I'm doing. And that's from a character standpoint, from a Batman who is the world's greatest detective. You have to have from that, not so much an actor, but I think, again, having a Ben Affleck type does help. But at the same time, he's got to be young enough where he's going to have to be around for Man of Steel sequel, Justice League, and whatever future incarnations, you know, that they would have, you know, beyond that, that you could see Batman or the Bruce Wayne character, you know, pop into cameo or make an appearance. I think Affleck is the right age for, you know, this particular role. Again, carrying enough experience and a big enough name. Let's face it, Man of Steel 2, however it's going to be titled, is going to draw money. It's Batman and Superman on the big screen at the same time, not in animated form, which has been done certainly, you know, plenty of times, but finally, it's happening where you're getting these two mega powers of comic book fiction together. And so I think this is tough. This is where 2015 gets really convoluted, because you have Avengers 2, you have the Man of Steel sequel, and you have Star Wars Episode 7. Which fan base is going to come out the strongest? I'll tell you right now, we're 2 years away. I'll see all three of those movies in the theaters opening weekend. I may not get to any midnight shows with my work schedule being what it is and having to be up and at work at 6 o'clock in the morning, but I'll be there for the opening weekend for all three of those shows, no matter where I'm located in these United States or beyond. So they're all going to draw money. I think Ben Affleck, the more I think about it, I think that it's a very fair and wise decision by Warner Brothers, by Zack Snyder, to cast Affleck as Batman. Very interesting to see what they do conceptually as far as, you know, the design of the suit. Obviously, they changed up Superman's suit just a little bit in Man of Steel. So, again, very interested to see how they're going to, I don't know, modernize. Maybe they'll stick to something similar to what Christian Bale wore, which wasn't a bad suit. And again, you like those adjustments that were made at the beginning of The Dark Knight when he goes in, you know, when Christian Bale goes into Lucius Fox and says, is there any way that I can, you know, get some separation so, you know, I can turn my head without having to turn my entire, you know, upper body. So again, just little things like that that, you know, haven't been addressed before or thought about before that, you know, that works. So again, very interested to see where that one lands up and what kind of story that they're going to tell. And obviously we have almost 2 years. It's probably going to be due out in the early portion of the summer. I know Avengers 2 is slated for a May release in 2015. I would imagine maybe they do a July release or June for Man of Steel 2. Somewhere in there, of course, you're going to have Star Wars. You might have a time in the theater where you have some overlap of these highly anticipated movies. So, fingers are crossed that that, you know, Ben Affleck does a solid job. And of course, because the internet is full of intelligent people, maybe I'm one of the. I say that sarcastically. Maybe I'm one of those quote unquote intelligent people. I'm certainly a smartass and very happy to claim that title. But because the internet is filled with the people that they are, they said, oh, well, you know, if Ben Affleck's going to be Batman, then certainly Robin would be cast as Matt Damon. First of all, horrible decision. And I was not a fan of Chris O'Donnell as Robin back in the 90s. I think if you bring in a Robin character, you need to, I think you almost need to make him a child, the child version. And I think Dick Grayson's been done over and over. Maybe you see a Tim Drake Robin, and you know, anything's possible. Maybe a Jason Todd. And if you do a Jason Todd Robin, then that opens things up to you know, a death in the family type of storyline down the road potentially. And if you're not familiar with Death in the Family, you should go back and find it. But certainly, I would imagine if you're listening to Nerds United, you're probably familiar with Death in the Family. Not to be confused with Death of the Family, which DC did just this past late winter, early spring, which was a fantastic story. I highly encourage you to go out and get those Death of the Family titles as well. So anyway, I'm getting off topic. I think, obviously, Matt Damon is, you know, he's an action movie guy. You look at the Bourne movies. Elysium came out, you know, just a few weeks ago. I haven't watched it. I don't know if that's my style. That, to me, not to get on a political tangent here, but something like Elysium just screams class warfare, you know, and certainly I'm sure it echoes some of the sentiments that are going on in the United States right now, but it's one of those that, I mean, I'm not rich at all. I'm definitely not in that 1% or anything like that. I'm probably lower middle class, but I just don't think when you make it too obvious that's the statement that you're trying to make, then you take away some of the fun for the audience. So anyway, that's a story for another day. Elysium, Matt Damon. What I like I said, I would bring in a younger person to portray Robin, maybe, you know, like a 15-year-old, something like, I don't remember how old Chris O'Donnell is. I don't know how old he was when he became Robin in Batman Forever, so forgive me for that. But I just think that Matt Damon, just because, you know, Ben Affleck's attached to the project doesn't mean that Matt Damon has to be anywhere near it. So, again, that's those are my thoughts on that. Again, Ben Affleck as Batman / Bruce Wayne, I'm all right with that decision. Moving on from that, I want to talk about one of my favorite comic book artists, as I'm sure I'm not alone, that this particular gentleman is top-notch and has been creating top-notch stuff for a long, long time. So long, in fact, that I'm not even 100% sure. Got to go back to the early 90s anyway. Made a big breakthrough in comic books, very unique style. Everything is painted. They're not, I mean, it's comic book art certainly, but it's not so much drawn as it is painted. Does unbelievable. Who am I talking about? Let's just get right to it. Alex Ross. And I'm not going to go a whole lot into Alex Ross's, you know, personal life or anything like that. Just because hopefully, you know, fingers crossed that I've dropped a note on his website, an interview request. So I hope that sometime in the near future I can sit down, even via Skype or phone or whatever, and talk with Alex Ross. Sensational talent in comic book art and beyond. I mean, I was checking out of the most reliable places on the internet, Wikipedia, which never lets you down. And, you know, he's done more than just comic book art. He's created posters for, you know, the Academy Awards, and you know, so much more. Did some covers for TV Guide and beyond. Again, it's really top notch. Some of the stuff that he's done. My three favorite works by him are things that I have them collected in trade paperbacks. Of course, you got to go back to 1994, where Marvel came out with a 4-issue story titled Marvels. And if you're not familiar with Marvels, just real quick what it is, it's the, I don't want to say origin, but it's the telling of superheroes or these, you know, tremendous characters, individuals who are just debuting. They've never been seen before by the public. So it's from the view and the perspective of a newspaper writer and photographer. Fantastic stuff that Alex Ross did with, I'm probably going to mispronounce his name, but Kurt Busiek or Busiek. Anyway, just amazing stuff. It starts out talking about the Human Torch, and Human Torch is not somebody that, you know, the traditional story we know of the Human Torch, Fantastic Four, the trip into space, getting hit by the cosmic radiation. This takes a bit of a different take on it, but you learn a little bit. Again, seeing it from someone else's perspective, you know, from instead of the omniscient perspective that comic books so oftentimes are created from, this is from the perspective of a news reporter. So, very cool stuff. A lot of it happens in New York City. That's been an epicenter and home for, you know, many, many superheroes. But Spider-Man, you see it. If you get the trade paperback, you see Spider-Man on the cover. Like I said, Human Torch, Namor, the Submariner is in there. You know, they Captain America, you know, going above and beyond. X-Men, Fantastic Four, Silver Surfer. I mean, I'm just flipping through here. You see Galactus. Just incredible stuff. Check it out. Fantastic artwork, unique storyline. And again, this was 1994. This was relatively early in Ross's career. Second one I want to bring to your attention, Kingdom Come, something that Ross did with Mark Waid. And again, it's an Elseworlds story. Takes place in a futuristic setting. You know, Superman has retired and let his hair grow out and working on the farm in Smallville. What would happen? I mean, it's from my understanding, and now I got hooked on this based on the art, but the story, you know, was incredible. Where you have, you know, basically a split of factions, in you know, you've got the Green Lantern siding with one guy, and Batman sort of, you know, being Batman and doing his own thing. So very again, unique setting. There's an amazing series in there where Superman is fighting Captain Marvel, you know, Shazam, and they're battling it out. Again, tremendous artwork. I'm saying tremendous a lot. I guess I could say fantastic or superb, but just great artwork from Alex Ross, and again, a fantastic story. That one came out in 1996. Again, I think it's a six-parter, but you get the story from a bit of a third-person point of view that kind of narrates and carries you along throughout the end. I'm a big fan of the final book in Kingdom Come, because you get Clark and you get Princess Diana, and they're sitting down to eat with Bruce Wayne. And Bruce Wayne, of course, is older, and because he's human, he, you know, has neck brace on and some other, you know, he takes a beating. Again, he's human, so some other, you know, apparatus to help him. They're basically sitting down in this cafe that is superhero themed. So, you know, they're you see Superman drinking from a Captain Marvel glass, and Bruce Wayne is drinking from a Green Lantern mug, and there's a Flash mug or Flash glass that Wonder Woman's drinking from. So again, just really cool. You know, all the servers in the restaurant are all decked out as superheroes. Check out Kingdom Come, and you won't regret that. And of course, you can't talk about, I don't think you can talk about Alex Ross without bringing up the book Justice that came out just, you know, this century, we'll say, 2005 to 2007. Fantastic story. It reminds me, I know that it's a different story because I've read the book and I've seen the movie, but Justice League Doom, a direct-to-video movie that DC put out, and it had Vandal Savage getting some of Earth's greatest supervillains together. You know, you have Bane, Cheetah, who is, of course, a villain of a nemesis, we'll say, of Wonder Woman. Martian Manhunter's villain in this is a Martian name, so, of course, you know I'm going to botch it. Ma'aleifiaka. Yeah, that's... Anyway, everybody, you know, Mirror Master, Star Sapphire, and, of course, Metallo. Not too bad. I only got one crazy name mispronounced. I think that's pretty good. But anyway, what you find is that they're all coming together because they can't stop their respective betters from the Justice League by themselves. Vandal Savage puts into place a plan. They, spoiler alert, they Mirror Master sneaks into the Batcave and pulls out a file from Batman's, you know, the Bat computer, and basically the file is how to stop every member of the Justice League, which of course leads to dissension among the ranks when Batman has to explain, oh yeah, they got this idea from me, but then they amped it up. Mine was never meant to kill, just to neutralize. Anyway, so that's the story from Justice League Doom. What you find in Justice, which again came out 2005 to 2007, a bi-monthly 12-issue story, again, drawn, art fantastic by Alex Ross, but basically it's Brainiac who's in charge of, or who's using his powers to bring together all the villains, the supervillains in the DC universe to counteract the Justice League. And there's, again, fantastic art. I'm a big fan of a particular portion of the story where, and I don't know exactly what this compound is that the Justice League is basically pouring all over their bodies, but in doing so, it gives them a protective armor that I think is supposed to keep them from being able to be, I don't want to say infected by Brainiac, but being able to, you know, kind of a telepathic stop, if you will, a cork keeps their thoughts their own and keeps Brainiac out. I think that's what its purpose was. It has been a while since I've read Justice, and shame on me. It's on the hey, pick this up and read it again list. It just haven't had the time. I'll tell you why in just a second, but check out Justice if you haven't. Those are three stories from Alex Ross that I'm big fan of. Marvel's Kingdom Come and Justice, and I don't think either of those will let you down. All right, real quick, want to touch on the last topic that I have for episode 3, and that's Batman, the animated series, but it's a little bit more than that because it's actually in written form. It's the compilation I picked up a couple weeks back called Mad Love and Other Stories. Now, if you're familiar with the title, Mad Love, it's a fantastic story into the background of Harley Quinn. Harley Quinn, of course, created by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm for Batman, the animated series, was never in any publication before that. So then they went and said, you know, let's kind of evaluate, trace back, you know, Harley's backstory. Of course, Dr. Harleen Quinzel, who was a psychiatrist or psychologist, one of the I get them confused all the time. And anyway, her first gig out of school was Arkham Asylum. Not a easy place at all for someone fresh out of picking up their doctorate, and she became fascinated. She wanted to get famous on the backs of the inmates by writing their story. Instead, she, of course, as we all know, became infatuated with the Joker and sprung him out, calling herself Harley Quinn. So Mad Love, what they did in 1994 is they took that character and, again, developed the backstory just a little bit so you could get a better understanding of who Dr. Harleen Quinzel was and how this transformation became. And she's trying to get Joker's attention. Joker, of course, is trying to figure out how to stop Batman. His plans never work. He always ends up back in Arkham. So in an attempt to get his attention, gain his favor, she takes an old gag that he wanted to use, couldn't find a way to make it work. The Joker couldn't. And she finds a way to make it work, and it's the old piranhas in the tank. Joker abandoned the idea because, you know, when you're looking at the piranhas, they don't appear to be smiling. And of course, Joker has to have that essence of humor. So what she did is one minor alteration to the plans is she hangs Batman upside down over the tank so that it appears that the piranhas are smiling because their frowns are turned upside down. God, that's a statement my mom used to say to me when I was a kid and grumpy. She'd be like, turn that frown upside down. So great. Now it comes into, you know, the podcast. Excellent. Thanks for that, Mom. But anyway, so she's about to get Batman, and Batman says, you know what? Joker's never going to believe it was you. She said, oh, of course he will. You know, my puddin' loves me. And Batman convinces her that Joker will never believe her unless he sees it for himself. So she calls Joker over, and Joker basically throws a fit and says, well, if I can't do it, you're not going to do it. And I'm going to play you a little bit, because what they did, they took Mad Love, the story written by Paul Dini and Bruce Timm, and they turned it into an episode in one of the future seasons of Batman the Animated Series. So real quick, I'm going to play for you a little bit of the clip after Batman has been freed, because Joker wasn't going to let Harley win. So here's just a little clip from Mad Love on Batman the Animated Series.
She almost had me, you know. Arms and legs chained, dizzy from the blood rushing to my head. I had no way out other than convincing her to call you. I knew your massive ego would never allow anyone else the honor of killing me. Though I have to admit, she came a lot closer than you ever did. Puddin'.
So there again, the bit of humor from the Batman character, which is so rare and really quite welcome. When it happens, it's very organic, and it just seems to make sense whenever Batman has just a little, I don't know, just a little nudge of lightheartedness in such a dark and trauma character. But anyway, I'm so happy that when I got to Mad Love, that it came in a compilation, a trade, Mad Love and Other Stories. You go through here, there's just some fantastic little quick shots, and most of them have some connection with Paul Dini, either written by Paul Dini or Bruce Timm, or some art done by at least one and maybe another artist. But just some fantastic stuff that really brings in quite a few members of the Rogues Gallery. You know, obviously Joker plays a part, Poison Ivy, Harley, as we know. So if you get the opportunity, check it out at your local brick and mortar, as they're called, local comic shops, or you can find it online. Batman's Mad Love and Other Stories. Again, another one that I don't think will disappoint you. And I've got to get out of here as they're begging me to get out so they can get into the production studio. I want to thank you all for tuning in for episode 3 of Nerds United, and we'll do it again next week when I'm joined by a couple of the creators for another Stash Publishing comic book, and you can check that out. Stay up to date on that on the Nerds United Facebook page. You can also follow Nerds United Podcast on Twitter. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'll see you next time on Nerds United.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.